Join your neighbors and talk to the experts about how to spend less and stay healthy. There will be exhibits and hourly workshops on water and energy savings, food and nutrition, neighborhood and community resources, weatherizing your home, transportation, a repair cafe, and much more, with childcare and lunch provided. Again, that's the Fix-It Fair on Saturday, January 27th, 9:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. at George Middle School, 10,000 North Burr Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 28th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from February 2nd through March 3rd. The Cascade Festival of African Films shows us Africa through the eyes of Africans, rather than a vision of Africa packaged for Western viewers. The films represent different countries and cultures and a range of lifestyles from pre-colonial to modern times, including both rural and urban settings. Films include 76 and The Footprints of Pan-Africanism and more at the Hollywood Theater, and The African Who Wanted to Fly, Foreign Bodies, Wulu, and many more at the Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, Room 104 at the PCC Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. Again, that's the 20th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from February 2nd through March 3rd. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience, KBOO, Portland.
And with that, I'd like to remind listeners that this is listener-supported community radio, and you can get involved down here. Just call kboo.fm and click on Donate to become a member of this important station. And here's what we have coming up for you this morning on KBOO. First, in just a moment, Political Perspectives presents Sojourner Truth Radio and a roundup of this past weekend's women's marches that took place across the world. At 10 o'clock, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary, and then at 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, on the Recovery Zone, host Stephanie Potter welcomes historian Ray Raphael and Community Rights U.S. founding director Paul Cienfuegos. Stay tuned for all of that coming up on Community Radio, KBOO. And we start now with Sojourner Truth Radio.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. On January 20th, 2018, one full year after the inauguration of Donald Trump, hundreds of thousands of women across the United States and across the world united to rally at women's marches from New York City to Las Vegas to Paris, Berlin, London, England to Los Angeles. It was in Los Angeles that the biggest march was held, estimated at 600,000 marchers. But there were many small marches around towns and cities across the nation, including in Alaska, where several thousand marchers turned up in Anchorage. The day of marching and speeches were seen as a condemnation of Trump and his policies, many of which target Black women, immigrant women, undocumented women and their families, as well as Muslim and Palestinian women. But the day also brought together women protesting a wide range of issues: sexual harassment, racial justice, economic justice, immigration, reproductive rights. Now, many were surprised by the large turnouts. In Chicago, the march this year was estimated to be bigger than last year, and a major Power to the Polls rally was held in Las Vegas. What made this year's event different? What were the reasons for the large turnout? What were the controversies? Let us go now to a clip from ABC telling us a bit about the marches.
The president was ensconced in the White House on Saturday, monitoring this crisis. Right outside and across the country, protest marches.
Celebrities, politicians joining the many women's marches. ABC's Eva Pilgrim joins us in studio. Eva, what did you see at the march here in New York?
Well, there were a lot of people here in New York, and this isn't just a New York thing or a U.S. thing. There are over 250 marches expected this weekend. Organizers dubbing it hashtag Weekend of Women.
Across the country, huge crowds, hundreds of thousands packing in, calling for change. From Philadelphia to San Francisco, Dallas to Toronto, almost 200,000 people in New York alone.
Stretching for as far as the eye can see, people lined up to march for blocks here in New York City.
This year's march falling on the one-year anniversary of President Trump's inauguration. The president tweeting about his success. Celebrate the historic milestones and unprecedented economic success and wealth creation that has taken place.
Yeah, just marching for his future, really.
Some protesting the president's policies. Others joining the growing Me Too movement and Time's Up campaign.
All righty. And our guests today are Emiliana Guerica, who is founder of the Women's March LA Foundation that organized the Women's March in Los Angeles, and Deborah Auger, Development Director at Middle East Children's Alliance. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Eileen Alfandary. Hundreds of thousands of federal workers are back on the job today after a brief three-day government shutdown. But it could only be a three-week respite. First the Senate, then the House approved the stopgap spending bill to fund the government through February 8th. A majority of Senate Democrats voted for the deal, brokered by Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, after Republican leaders said they would move to a vote on safeguarding the young undocumented immigrants whose protected status Donald Trump has revoked. Here's Schumer on the Senate floor.
We will vote today to reopen the government, to continue negotiating a global agreement, with the commitment that, if an agreement isn't reached by February the 8th, the Senate will immediately proceed to consideration of legislation dealing with DACA.
16 Senate Democrats voted no, including California's two senators, Dianne Feinstein and Kamala Harris, New York's Kirsten Gillibrand, Cory Booker of New Jersey, Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts, independent Bernie Sanders, who caucuses with Democrats, also voted no. The House quickly passed the measure afterwards, and Donald Trump signed it into law. Three-quarters of House Democrats voted no, including members of the Congressional Black Caucus, whose chair is Cedric Richmond.
People call us, but we have earned the reputation as the conscience of this Congress. And there's no way in good conscience we could vote for a bill that leaves so many people behind and so many American families behind and in such an irresponsible way.
House Democrats who voted no also noted that while Senate Leader Mitch McConnell has promised to bring DACA up for a vote in the Senate, House Republican Majority Leader Paul Ryan has made no such guarantee. Some immigrants' rights advocates denounced Senate Democrats, saying they caved in to pressure and failed to abide by their promise to DACA recipients to hold firm against voting for a stopgap spending bill absent protections for the Dreamers. A new report says Attorney General Jeff Sessions pressured FBI Director Christopher Wray to fire Deputy Director Andrew McCabe. The news website Axios says Sessions took action at the urging of Donald Trump. But Axios reports three sources told it that Wray threatened to resign if his deputy were removed. Trump nominated Wray as FBI director last June to replace James Comey, whom he fired. Trump repeatedly has attacked McCabe on Twitter. Part of his animus has to do with McCabe's wife running unsuccessfully for office as a Democrat with ties to Hillary Clinton. The New York Times and other publications reported in December that McCabe is expected to retire after he becomes eligible for his pension early this year. McCabe hasn't announced his plans. A tsunami watch was canceled this morning for coastal areas of California, Oregon, and Washington. An earthquake with magnitude 7.9 struck off the coast of Alaska, prompting the warning along the West Coast. The quake hit at 12:32 a.m. local time, about 175 miles southeast of Kodiak Island. Officials in Kodiak encouraged locals to evacuate in the wake of a possible tsunami. People reported on social media the quake was felt 400 miles away in Anchorage, Alaska. Legendary South African jazz musician Hugh Masekela has died at the age of 78 after a decade-long fight with prostate cancer. Masekela was often called the father of South African jazz. In the 1960s, he went into exile in the United Kingdom and the United States, where he collaborated with U.S. jazz legend Harry Belafonte and used his music to spread awareness about apartheid in South Africa. Masekela's composition, Bring Him Back Home, calling for Nelson Mandela to be released from prison, became an international anthem for the anti-apartheid movement.
Bring back Nelson Mandela, bring him back home to Soweto.
South African President Jacob Zuma expressed his condolences, saying Masekela kept the torch of freedom alive globally, fighting apartheid through his music and mobilizing international support for the struggle for liberation and raising awareness of the evils of apartheid, Zuma said. Egypt's military has arrested its former chief of staff, who was planning to run in upcoming elections against President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi. A military statement said Sami Anan breached army regulations by declaring his intention to run without first clearing it with the military. The military said Anan also incited against the armed forces in his comments to the nation when he declared his intention to run for president earlier this month. Anan becomes the latest in a string of potential competitors to al-Sisi who've been arrested or otherwise forced from the race. Al-Sisi is a former head of the military. He is considered virtually certain to win re-election in the March vote. I'm Eileen Alfandari. You're listening to Sojourner Truth on Pacifica Radio.
This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. And before we go to the Women's March that took place, we are going to just give a brief, all too brief honoring to Hugh Masekela. As you heard in our news headlines, he passed away on January 23rd at the age of 78. He was in Johannesburg, South Africa. He was born in 1939 in Witberg, South Africa. He began singing and playing piano as a child. He started playing trumpet at 14 years old. He was raised mostly by his grandmother, who ran an illegal bar for minors. This, according to Hugh Masekela's biography. Of course, he is known throughout the world for his trumpet playing. He was also a singer and composer. Now, notable trumpeteers like Dizzy Gillespie and Clifford Brown were inspired Hugh Masekela to play bebop with the Jazz Epistles in 1959, the first black band in the country to record an album. Now, from 1954, Hugh Masekela played music that closely reflected his life experience, the agony, conflict, and exploitation South Africa faced during that period. And he was an outspoken opponent of apartheid. And his music protested about apartheid, slavery, repressive governments, and the hardships individuals were living. There are many who will be mourning the loss of Hugh Masekela, who was just such an incredible and powerful, larger-than-life talent. I had the opportunity to meet Hugh Masekela and interview him some years back when he was in Los Angeles, occasion I will never forget, including attending a concert where he played. Now, he lived in the United States, Europe, as well as his home country.
And he spent quite a bit of time in the United States, where he attended the Manhattan School of Music in New York City and began forming his own bands when apartheid tightened in South Africa. He also played in the band of Fela Kuti, recording 5 albums and touring with that band. Today, we are going to do an honoring and remembering of Hugh Masekela. Very sad news for his loss. And in the tradition of Sojourner Truth, we will play the mourning song by Dube Nahore.
Okoloka o pepe kukulu, awo pepe kukulu, awo pepe kukulu, yangoku ngele, yangoku ala, iya iya iya. Oh, okoloka lo,
this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth, honoring now the late Hugh Masekela, who has gone on to the world of ancestors. Meanwhile, today we are going to focus the rest of the hour on the women's marches that took place the weekend of January 20th. Numbers a lot larger than some had predicted. The focus of the women's march this year was voter registration, and organizers promised to take the Power to the Polls event that was held in Las Vegas to cities across the country. They've pledged to support the more than 600 women who will run in races this year. They plan on targeting first-time voters. Now, in the Power to the Polls Women's March event that happened on Sunday, January 21st, the day after women's marches were held across the nation, the largest being in Los Angeles, which is estimated to have 600,000 attendees, effort was made to give an inclusive face to the speakers at the march in Las Vegas. Particular attention given to Black women who historically have been marginalized in the feminist movement, but who are the most progressive voting bloc in the United States. 94% of Black women voted for Hillary Clinton, and 98% voted for Democrat Doug Jones in Alabama. 53% of white women voted for Trump. And despite several Black activists, from Women's March organizer Tamika Mallory to Black Lives Matter LA spokeswoman Dr. Melina Abdullah, calling out the white women who voted for Trump, will their message have an impact on the women who voted for Trump? Or were they speaking for those who already oppose Trump? And what impact will the Women's March have on Democratic Party politics that seem to be proceeding business as usual? An example being the recent cave by Democrats in the Senate on DACA and likely giving Trump his wall along the Mexican border. Only time will tell. But meanwhile, all eyes are on the 2018 midterm elections. And like any movement, the march was not without controversy. There was controversy in LA when Palestinian rights supporters, some of them, objected to Scarlett Johansson's participation, given her record of supporting Israeli government policies against Palestinians. But there are lots of great voices. We're going to bring some of that to you today. And also, we'll be talking with one of the key organizers, main organizers of the Women's March in Los Angeles, where very clearly, very, very successful effort to pull out 300,000 women. Now, in Los Angeles, the march, the speakers were pretty heavy with Hollywood, with actors from Hollywood. Let us go now to Viola Davis, award-winning actress, black actress Viola Davis, who brought the house down with her speech.
In the words of my fellow American, Malcolm X, I'm gonna make it plain. In 1877, America, the greatest country on this planet, put laws in place called the Jim Crow laws. And the Jim Crow laws restricted the rights to quadroons, octoroons, blacks, Hispanics, Indians, Malays, restricted medical, restricted relationships, restricted education, restricted life. It told us that we were less than, and it came on the heels of the 13th Amendment. It came on the heels of 55 individuals, great Americans, writing the greatest document called the Constitution of the United States, saying, "We the people." Now, the reason why those destructive laws came into place, I think, can be greatly described by Martin Luther King. And what he said about time is, I'm not ready to wait 100 or 200 years for things to change. That I think actually that time is neutral, that it can either be used constructively or destructively, that human progress rarely rolls in on inevitability. It is through human dedication and effort that we move forward. And then when we don't work, what happens is that time actually becomes an ally to the primitive forces of social stagnation. And the guardians of the status quo are in their oxygen tanks, keeping the old order alive. And so the time needs to be helped by every single moment doing right. And the reason why these Jim Crow laws were in place that stifled my rights and your rights is because we fell asleep. We fall asleep when we're moving ahead and we don't look to the left and right and see that we're not including people in this move ahead. Because really, at the end of the day, we only move forward when it doesn't cost us anything. But I'm here today saying that no one and nothing can be great unless it costs you something. I am speaking today, not just for the Me Toos, because I was a Me Too. But when I raise my hand, I am aware of all the women who are still in silence.
All right, and there you heard part of the speech of the actress who attended Viola Davis bringing the house down at the Women's March in Los Angeles. You'll have to go to the Women's March website to hear her entire speech. Now, I'd like to welcome to Sojourner Truth one of the main or key organizers of the Women's March in LA, who managed to successfully bring out 600,000 people to the Women's March. I'd like to welcome Emiliana Gurica. Emiliana, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Okay, everybody refers to her as Emmy. Now, Emmy brings more than 10 years of experience organizing events to the Women's March in LA. In 2016, Emmy founded the Women's March LA Foundation, a nonprofit organization, and is the driving force behind the official Women's March in Los Angeles. Now, since January of last year, Emmy has become extremely involved in activism, both on a local and national level, and has served as the bridge between many organizations. She's also a contributor to the Huffington Post. She is an entrepreneur based in Los Angeles with a passion, she says, for giving back to the community. And she is an award-winning event producer. So, Emmy, first, congratulations on the what can only be seen as a resounding success of the Women's March in Los Angeles. How did y'all do it? tell us a bit behind the scenes and the lead up, because we can only imagine the amount of work that took and resources.
Definitely. Well, Viola says it best, where you have to, you know, lose something in order to gain something. We were working 18-hour days on this. You know, we're all volunteers. We, you know, are meeting communities, are meeting organizations, you know, aside from our family, aside from our jobs. So we are vested in Women's March for Los Angeles. So we're working day and night. You know, at some point, we felt like somebody didn't want this to happen. Like, we were like, we didn't find a space, security cost us more, insurance went up, but we pulled it off. I think that communities are still in need, still want to be heard, still coming out. I mean, I was floored. Communities that I thought were not going to come out did come out to support. And that was exciting.
Yeah. And Emiliana, I mean, you, as you say, you're all volunteers. Costs went up. How did you manage? I mean, what sources, what support did you get in pulling this off to pay for all of this? I mean, there was the huge sound stage. And also tell us a bit about eliciting Hollywood. Did you have people specifically assigned to working on that?
We're still fundraising. We've sold shirts. We asked for funds. We've done, we're doing donation drives. We've applied for grants. All of it has been fundraised grassroots by someone giving a dollar or $2. It's not like we have major donors. Some people think the stars give us money. No, they don't.
They speak on the platform, but they don't give money.
No, they don't. We invite them to speak, you know, but just like anyone, they come to speak, and they are not funding. Who are funding are the people that attend by, you know, sending in money, by buying a shirt. And as far as, you know, Hollywood, they reach out to us for the most part. And then Gina, this producer of Dancing with the Stars, who's...
That's like, Gina Belafonte.
Dina Katz.
Dina.
Yes,
okay.
Dina. But Dina Belafonte, she helps tremendously as well. Getting to Hollywood and asking for people to speak. You know, last year we had a lot of people reach out. The same with this year. And it has to do with what is the artist doing for the community? Where are they in the community? So we go and Dina speaks to them, Gina reaches out. So it's a lot of us doing the work and trying to figure out who's best to take stage and how it would work.
Right. Now tell us too about the theme of the march, because that has been met with some criticism by some, you know, focusing on voting. In my intro, I talked about the voter registration drive, also the event that took place in Las Vegas on the 21st, was it, focusing on on voting. So there were a few controversies on that. And also in L.A., I want to give you the opportunity to respond to the controversy of Palestinian groups who objected to Scarlett Johansson's participation on the basis that she's a spokesmodel for SodaStream, an Israeli company that manufactures home fizzy drink machines in an illegal Israeli settlement built on land from which Palestinian Bedouins were forcibly expelled. So a chance for you to respond to those.
Right. Emiliana. We've been met with controversy with Hear the Vote, Hear Our Vote, and Power to the Polls. Because, you know, as some people say, not all people can vote. I beg to differ. I think we vote with our presence. I think we vote with our wallet. It doesn't necessarily mean that just because you can't vote at a poll that you are not voting. We are. We're voting every day on what is acceptable as a society by showing up. We're voting every day by spending money in stores that may not be good for us as a society. So I think that, you know, in speaking to a lot of people that say we're not eligible to vote, this seems tone deaf. But the only real change we can see in our society is through voting candidates that reflect our society. And I get it. My parents were illegal. I was illegal, and I couldn't vote for years. But again, I can vote with my wallet, and I can vote with my presence.
Right. Emmy, also, Emmy, just in wrapping up here. Oh, right. Did you want to say anything about the Scarlett Johansson's controversy or not? You may not. Yeah.
Well, Scarlett Johansson, we were met with controversy with Scarlett Johansson. At no point did we think we were bringing her on to insult the Palestinian community. But we receive letters almost for every speaker we put on about why we shouldn't put them on there. I mean, almost every speaker has a few letters of complaint. And so at no point are we trying to insult any community by bringing on different speakers. She was speaking on Time's Up and the Me Too movement. At no point was she speaking ill about anyone. And I think that, you know, that was not our intention, was to insult any community.
Yeah, and finally, in terms of what's next, we know that the Power to the Polls will be taken around the nation, but International Women's Month is coming up, as well as International Women's Day on March 8th. Has the Women's March LA or even nationally discussed anything around March the 8th yet?
So I think that Women's March will be producing something, but this year I think we've learned our lesson. I think that we need to organize with communities that are already organizing. I think that a lot of us didn't know who else was organizing. And so we went ahead and put something together when there were other communities already organizing. So I think this year we will put something together that is wanted by the community that we can join forces with other organizations.
Right. Okay. Well, Emmy, we look forward to that. As you know, my listeners know, I've been involved in working on International Women's Day events for a few decades now. So I look forward to having a strong event in LA on March the 8th. But Emmy, congratulations again. Whatever the criticisms were, there is no doubt that drawing out 600,000 participants is the organizers of the event have to be congratulated, as well as all of the women who turned out. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All righty. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. I think what we'll do now, we'll go now to hear some more of the speeches from the Women's March, including
union activist, Maria Elena Durazo. She is now running, a Democrat running for the California Senate in 2018. She is the General Vice President for Immigration, Diversity, and Civil Rights for Unite HERE. She has been on this show many times, and Maria Elena had one of the most powerful speeches from what I have heard at the Women's March, and she is followed by Juana Melara, who is a hotel worker speaking at the Women's March in L.A. Let's go to those voices now.
I think Dr. King would be pleased with us. Pleased that today's civil rights movement has grown. Grown to defend Muslims targeted by Donald Trump's travel ban. Grown to defend the dreamers that Trump continues to threaten. Grown to defend our sisters and brothers from sacred areas like Africa and Haiti and Central America. We have grown to defend transgender soldiers that Trump wants to reject. We have grown to defend women that Trump sexually assaulted and harassed. But with that inclusion comes responsibilities. We are responsible to speak out, walk out, stand up, and resist. When Dr. King said, "I have a dream," yes, he did. But we must also remember that he said, "No person has the right to rain on your dreams," and that includes the President of the United States of America. And I have pledged to disobey Donald Trump. Disobey his unconstitutional assaults on our freedoms and diversity and equality and sisterhood. Disobey his assaults on immigrant workers, on the rights of workers to take action and be represented by a union. Our right to have health care and a pension and a paycheck that supports our family. Our movement is stronger, our commitment is deeper, and our children and our grandchildren, like my granddaughters, Sydney and Seneca, will be better off. No one is going to stop us, no matter how high their political office, no matter how much money they have, they will not stop our movement. Sisters and brothers, there is a woman here with me. She is a hotel housekeeper in Long Beach. When she came forward and spoke about sexual harassment, some politicians in Long Beach ignored her. But Time Magazine believed her. They made her Woman of the Year and a silence breaker. Please welcome Juana Melara.
My name is Juana Melara. I'm a member of UNITE here, Local 11. I've been a room attendant for 23 years now. We work hard. We work alone. We walk into a stranger's bedroom, and we never know who we'll find inside each room. I have been sexually harassed. Men have exposed themselves, masturbate in front of us, and have asked for sexual favors. Some men treat room attendants as if we were another amenity in the room. The housekeeper confronts sexual harassment and inhuman workloads. By the end of the day, we go home with no strength, no energy to be there with our families. For years, I stayed silent. I was afraid of losing my job. I was afraid of losing a paycheck to pay my bills. And for years I stayed quiet, just like many other housekeepers. My union empowered me. And some showed me that I was not alone. And I ask you to stand with women against physical and sexual abuse. I will not be silent anymore. No more silence.
All righty, and that was Maria Elena Durazo and Juana Melara speaking at the Women's March Los Angeles. We're going to go to station break now, and when we return, our guest will join us, Deborah Auger from the Palestine Conflict, on the Palestine Conflict at the Women's March in Los Angeles, and we'll hear more voices from the Women's March. Stay with us. We'll be right back. All righty, and that's Bring Him Back Home by now, the late, great Hugh Masekela. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. If you've missed any part of this hour from 10 this morning for 90 days after that, just go to kpfk.org, scroll down to archives, click on Sojourner Truth. You'll be able to hear the show in its entirety. Now, we are going to be having a guest, Deborah Auger, who is the Development Director of the Middle East Children's Alliance. Today we're covering the Women's March, but if you've missed any part of this hour from 10 this morning for 90 days after that, just go to kpfk.org, scroll down to archives, click on Sojourner Truth. You'll be able to hear the show in its entirety, and you can subscribe for a free podcast. You could also check us out on our website at www.sotrueradio.org, and if you're a member of Facebook, you can like and friend us on Facebook. Look for Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott. And today we would like to give a shout out to Sojourner Truth listeners in the city of Las Vegas, Nevada. In Las Vegas, Nevada. Just go to SoundCloud and look for Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott. Now we're going to return to our coverage of the women's marches that took place around the country and indeed around the world, the largest of which took place in Los Angeles. There were, despite the success of the march, there were, of course, some controversies around the voices of grassroots women, how they were represented. There was a heavy celebrity presence, and most of the coverage around the world focused on the celebrity participants and not on issues that impact women with the least, including poverty, welfare rights, women's criminalization, even ending domestic violence. And there was controversy in Los Angeles when Palestinian rights supporters objected to Scarlett Johansson's participation, given her record on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And indeed, her speech at the march was one that was highlighted by international press. But in the presentation by Black Lives Matter LA at the LA March, Dr. Melina Abdullah, who spoke for the group, handed the mic to her daughter, Tandiwe Abdullah. And this is what she had to say from Black Lives Matter Los Angeles.
My name is Tandiwe Abdullah. I'm 14. And as a Black Muslim girl, it is very important to me that Black Lives Matter also values the lives of the Muslim women in Palestine, the Muslim women and femmes in Palestine. The U.S. justifies and advances the global war on terror via its alliance with Israel and is complicit in the genocide taking place against the Palestinian people. The U.S. requires Israel to use 75% of all the military aid it receives to buy U.S.-made arms. But it makes U.S. citizens complicit in the abuses committed by the Israeli government. Israel is an apartheid state with over 50 laws on the books that sanction discrimination against the Palestinian people. We urge you to fight the expanding numbers of anti-BDS bills being passed in states around the country. This type of legislation not only harms the movement to end the Israeli occupation of Palestine, but it is a threat to the constitutional right of free speech and protest. Thank you.
It is not enough to elevate women, femmes, and genderqueer people to the positions of leadership they deserve. We need to have a new form of leadership. We must make it clear that Black Lives Matter stands with the people of Palestine. Thank you.
All righty, there you go. And I'd like to welcome Deborah Auger, Development Director at Middle East Children's Alliance, which is a nonprofit organization working for the rights of children in the Middle East, including in Palestine, by sending humanitarian aid, supporting projects for children, and educating North American and international communities about the impact of U.S. policy on children in the region. Deborah, welcome.
Thank you.
So,
and thank you for paying that statement by that young woman from Black Lives Matter. She said a lot of what I would like to say, but we can talk more.
Yeah, and tell us, clearly the march was a success numbers-wise. 600,000 at least is reported in Los Angeles. And when you look at the press coverage around the world, though, I haven't read everything, but looking at some of the highlights, there was a heavy focus on the celebrities who spoke, and a key one was Scarlett Johansson. Tell us, why is that considered a problem for those working on Palestinians' rights?
Scarlett Johansson has been for many years essentially a spokesmodel for an Israeli company. I say Israeli company, but they are actually operating in an illegal settlement in the West Bank, land that was taken and ethnically cleansed from Palestinians many years ago. All the settlements in the West Bank are considered illegal under international law. And this is an Israeli company that has heavily marketed itself to Americans as environmental, a kind of what we would call greenwashing, to cover the crimes and the human rights violations against Palestinian people by trying to look environmentally friendly. But that aside, it exploits its workers. It is operating on stolen land. And Scarlett Johansson had been an ambassador to Oxfam, a wonderful organization that does great work around the world, including in Palestine. And she had to resign from that position as an ambassador to Oxfam because she was supporting this company, SodaStream, which operates, again, in an illegal Israeli settlement. And she chose to promote a private Israeli company that is violating international law over being an ambassador to Oxfam. So she is really standing with the structures and the systems and the individuals who are oppressing Palestinians in their indigenous land in Palestine, through a brutal Israeli military occupation, rather than standing with Palestinian women who are fighting for justice and for freedom.
Right. And the statement, it was actually the Palestinian American Women's Association that announced it was boycotting the Women's March in Los Angeles. And they have a petition online that's been signed by many people, including Code Pink and Marcy Winograd, who is a former congressional peace candidate with Jewish Voice for Peace, and many others, Sandra Hale from UCLA and others. Well, thank you for joining us today, Deborah, and breaking this down for us. And we spoke to one of the organizers of the Women's March early, and she said, well, for every speaker, you know, there are some objections. But I'll have to say, this particular speaker, it wasn't a question of somebody doesn't like this speaker or doesn't like that speaker, but it really had to do with a political position. And now internationally, Scarlett Johansson is very much associated with the Women's March. Just a final thought from you, Deborah.
Well, I think it's unfortunate that someone like Scarlett Johansson is associated with the Women's March when so many women at the grassroots level have been trying to make the march about justice for all women, not just women with power or celebrity, but women who are fighting in their communities for a more just world, for against poverty and against oppression, against police brutality, against the U.S.'s role in the world of keeping women, men, and children down when they're fighting all over the world to be free.
Right. Well, on that note, also on March the 8th, women in 50 countries have called for a strike. There is a protest of any kind if people can go out on strike, including from housework, and they say sex work as well, if they can go out on strike, and if not, participate in protests and rallies. That's women in 50 countries. That call came out of Argentina, and hopefully those events on March 8th will touch on a lot of what you have raised, Deborah. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay, and we're going to wrap up our show with some of the speech. We don't have time for the entire speech by Kimberly Crenshaw, co-founder and executive director of the African American Policy Forum and a law professor at UCLA and Columbia Law School, leading authority in the area of civil rights, black feminist legal theory, race, racism, and the law. And she is credited with coining the term intersectionality that is becoming increasingly popular in academic circles as well as with movement insiders. Let's hear what Kimberly Crenshaw had to say at the Women's March in Los Angeles.
I'm going to go out on a limb here. I hope you let me do so. I have a hunch that there's some people who are watching us, some people who might be even in our crowd, who are worried. They're worried that with all this talk about racism and patriarchy and homophobia, xenophobia, transphobia, all of this difference is going to make it harder for us to unite under one banner. They long for those good old days when we all marched together. I don't know when that was. Under one banner, and to them, this is a tragedy, a lost opportunity, because we're all just talking about the isms. Well, I'm going to make that tragedy worse in this moment, because I'm a black woman, I'm going to talk about black women, and I'm going to talk about intersectionality. So I'm going to tell you about what the real tragedy is. The real tragedy is how destructive it is when our movements march to one-stick drummers. We miss things, and when we miss things, it harms us. That's how we wound up with this diminished democracy in which the fundamental right to vote has been undermined. Did you know that the number of people who lost their right to vote was more than the margin that determined the outcome of the last presidential election? People like 100-year-old Grace Hardison of North Carolina, who had voted every year for 24 years, but was turned away when her name was purged from the polls. Now, we'd be wrong to think that this problem just started last year. No, it's much older than that. Let's think about the Supreme Court and that fifth vote that gutted the Voting Rights Act, the most cherished victory of the civil rights movement. Let's think about that fifth vote that gutted campaign finance reform, turning elections into markets in which billionaires win. And let's remember, while we're thinking about this fifth vote, that one Supreme Court appointment that changed everything. the man who was narrowly confirmed after a black woman named Anita Hill showed that he was not the man for the job. If we had only listened, but we couldn't. We couldn't because we were divided between race and gender. Painfully, some folks, black folks, argued that harassment just wasn't something that black women cared about, demonstrating a profound ignorance about the fact that it was black women who fought back, black women who made sexual harassment the law that it is, black women like Carmita Wood and Michelle Vincent and countless others who suffered abuse at work since we arrived on these shores. And too many of our feminist friends thought race had nothing to do with it. We were divided and we were conquered because the history that held our movements together for too long has been ignored. But today, let's imagine a different possibility. What if we had known about how Recy Taylor's tragedy became the linchpin for triumph? Recy was the black woman who was gang raped by several white men on her way home from church in 1944. But as Danny McGuire tells us, it's not what happened to her that changed history, but her refusal to be silent about it. Recy insisted on justice, and along with another courageous black woman, founded an organization that would become the backbone for the Montgomery bus boycott. And you all know that bus boycott changed the world. That woman who stood beside Recy Taylor, the one who refused to be silent, was the same woman who refused to go to the back of the bus 11 years later. Her name was Rosa Parks. See, quiet as it's kept. Parks didn't refuse to give up her seat because her feet were tired. She wasn't a quiet seamstress who merely stumbled into history. She was a social activist who cut her teeth by resisting the oppression of black women. She spoke the truth when too many white sisters averted their eyes and too many black ones held them in shame. That truth grounds the social revolt that we inherit today. So this moment is part of Rosa Parks' legacy. Recy Taylor's and Ida B. Wells and Pauli Murray and Flo Kennedy and Aline Hernandez and Shirley Chisholm and so many others who refuse to allow themselves to be divided and conquered so we don't have to. We can wake the sleeping giant that is us and take back our future. We will know we're on the right path when we are as outraged about sexual abuse in prisons and patrol cars as we are when it happens in Hollywood and in colleges. We'll know we're on the right track when we mourn the loss of Ayanna Stanley Jones as well as Tamir Rice, when we can say the name of India Kager and Kayla Moore and Michelle Cusseaux in the same breath as Michael Brown, Eric Garner, Philando Castile. And if we reach this goal, future generations will look back on us as the ones when faced with growing hatred, obscene inequality, and human extinction, wove a tapestry of resistance out of our difference, lifting up forgotten legacies to take back our future. And it's happening. It's beginning in Alabama and in Virginia. It's going to happen in California, Nevada, and across this country. When we take leadership from the margins, things change. So, as we go forward into 2018, let's honor Recy Taylor and Rosa Parks and the nameless sheroes on whose shoulders we stand. find your inner black woman and vote. Vote!
Kimberly Crenshaw, Find Your Inner Black Woman, speaking at the Women's March that took place on the weekend of January 20th in Chicago. 300,000 participants, New York, 200,000, Philadelphia, 50,000, Park City, Utah, also in San Francisco, 50 to 60,000 marchers, San Jose, 20,000, Fort Worth, Texas, 5,000, also Melbourne, Australia, Munich, Germany, Athens, Greece, Barcelona, Spain, 38 cities across Canada, and in Togo, in the Pacific. So there you go, women speaking out around the world. We are out of time. We'd like to thank all of today's guests. Today's show produced by myself, Margaret Prescott. I'd like to thank the Sojourner Truth team, Sherelle Withers, our intern, our assistant producer, Stephanie Case, Mr. T. Teddy Robinson, our engineer. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go on.
You were listening to Sojourner Truth Radio here on KBOO Portland. Coming up later today, we've got a 10:15 Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein at 11 o'clock on the Recovery Zone. Stephanie Potter welcomes historian Ray Raphael and Community Rights U.S. Founding Director Paul Cienfuegos. And we'll listen to a little more Hugh Masekela, and then we'll get right to Air Cascadia. This is KBOO Community Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Thirsty City, a monthly beat and rap night at The Know in Portland. On Saturday, January 27th, Thirsty City hosts the launch party for their new label and cassette release featuring 29 beat instrumentalists from Portland and Munich. The release party also features live sets by Bri Zen, Two North, and more. Again, that's Thirsty City at The Know, 3728 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.